Good morning, I'm Gina Kaufman. Welcome to Central Standard. We've all heard about the power of storytelling, but it turns out that power can either work for or against us. In a moment, we'll hear from a KU professor who conducted a recent study in a domestic violence shelter. She found that women in the shelter subtly reshaped their stories several times in order to gain access to much-needed resources. But while the strategic approach helped them get the practical things they needed, the shifts in their narratives put their emotional recovery in jeopardy. Adrienne Kunkel is here to tell us more. She's a professor of communication studies at KU. Hi, Adrienne.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show. This is a great opportunity.
Well, thanks so much for being here. First of all, how did you initially become involved in the work being done in domestic violence shelters?
Well, it's been kind of a lifelong passion of mine. In my undergraduate work, I was both a communication studies major and also a women's studies major. And I've always been interested in working with marginalized groups, specifically women who have endured some sort of domestic violence. I came from an extremely supportive environment and childhood and kind of wanted to give back some of that to others.
Yeah, well, tell us about the study you conducted. How did you do your research and what did you find?
Okay, well, we've done a couple of different studies, but the one that I'm focusing on specifically right now is on survivors. And we interviewed 28 survivors, and this is with a colleague of mine that's now at Kent State and also a colleague who was my graduate student at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas. And we interviewed the women and talked to them about their experiences with domestic violence, and also we trained to become crisis advocates as well, went through a 40-hour training. And so not only were we interviewing women, but we were observing, participating, and being volunteers as well.
What did you find in the interviews, in the interviewing process?
What we found is that the shelter that we studied does take what's called an empowerment-based approach. And an empowerment-based approach basically means that you need to trust the survivor, and any decision-making or choices that she makes are hers to make. And as advocates, our job is to provide her with information, resources, contacts in the area. But it's really up to her to make use of those contacts. And what we found is that while not a lot of women could define empowerment per se, they were actually embodying empowerment in different kinds of ways.
So, what do you mean by that?
They would actually say things like, wow, I can really do this on my own. I feel okay. I finally feel like I'm breaking free from my abuser. On the other hand, though, we found that many of the survivors also, while feeling empowered, also felt a sense of disempowerment.
How did that manifest itself?
Basically, that manifested itself in terms of two different things. First of all, women pointed out that there were some flaws in the system. So the biggest thing that pretty much every woman that we talked to focused on in their interview for at least part of it was the 30-day stay policy. And they felt like that just wasn't enough time for them to process or deal with their situation.
What is the reason for that policy? And maybe just explain what it is a little bit.
Yeah. So when they call in to get into the shelter, they're told that they will have 30 days and they need to figure out where they're going to go next and try to find employment perhaps, new housing. Sometimes they have to provide proof that they're fit to parent, try to find a job, do all those kinds of things. And so they feel this incredible pressure when they get in that they have to kind of jump on it right away. And they felt that that was kind of paralyzing in a way, because by the time they would start to do things, they would find that they would have about 1 or 2 weeks left and not enough time to really get moving. And so they felt disempowered in that sense because they didn't have enough time. And so they also felt like they had to kind of create a story for each different resource that they needed. So they had the story that they needed to tell to get into the shelter. They had a story that they needed to tell to try to get housing. They need a story to tell to try to get a protection from abuse order. And so all of these different stories are very fragmented. And that's one of the things that I've really found when I've been going through all of the hundreds of pages of transcripts that I have from the women.
So this idea that the story becomes fragmented, why does that matter? Why is that significant?
Okay, it's significant because, you know, domestic violence is a trauma. It's severe. It can be, it's something that you never forget. It can manifest itself in a lot of different ways. Many people, when they think of domestic violence, they think of, you know, the pounding of the face into the concrete or the stabbing or something physical, sexual. But it's a lot more than that. It can be emotional. It can be intimidation. It can be a lot of different things. And so it's something that's traumatic. It's something that never goes away. You never forget it. And in order to really process that, to start to heal from that, the only way to do that is to really fully tell your story. And there's a line of research that I've been following for a great number of years by James Pennebaker and his colleagues at the University of Texas. And he's done studies with hundreds of, probably thousands of people, and has found that when people have a chance to put their story into a coherent narrative, so, you know, start to finish, and really get a chance to explore their emotions and talk about those feelings surrounding that trauma, that they have a lot of psychological, physiological, and emotional benefits that accrue from that. So when the women fragment their stories, they're not getting that opportunity to tell the full story.
Are there contexts other than domestic violence shelters where stories and how people tell them have profound consequences on the level that you're describing? I mean, you're talking about recovery from really serious trauma.
Well, certainly there's counseling that, you know, that they could go to. Many of them don't necessarily utilize that, though, or realize that that's an option that they can turn to. Within the shelter, though, there's other women that they can talk to, and that has provided a sense of support and helps them to see that, yes, I can do this on my own.
Did you have a chance to witness any of those interactions?
I did. I tried to just sort of blend in as an advocate and as a volunteer. And so even though I was a professor and a feminist scholar at KU, I would take that hat off and put my volunteer advocate hat on when I was at the shelter. So I'd try to hang out and just sit in the on the couch and listen to stories. But what I think that shelters need to start thinking about in the future is possibly reconsidering the 30-day stay limit policy and also hiring someone whose specific job it is to just hang out and listen and talk, whether it's in the kitchen, in the living room, on the smoking porch, in the backyard, wherever it is that the women want to talk. That person's role is just there to listen.
But both of those moves would require a certain amount of resources to hire a paid person or to allow people to stay. I mean, it would be lovely if people could stay indefinitely just by saying that they needed to, but that seems like maybe from a practical standpoint, challenging.
Absolutely. You're right about that. I think hiring someone to play that role would not be that far out of the question to do. But obviously, yes, a shelter has limits. It has space. It has a certain number of beds. That's why I think that kind of balancing this empowerment approach with sort of a case management approach so that when the woman comes in and she knows that she has 30 days before she has to leave, that maybe an advocate can sit down with her after she's had a couple of days to adjust to being there and say, okay, what are we going to do? Let's think about this month period. Let's think about, by the end of the first week, what do we want to have accomplished? By the end of the second week, and kind of continually check in with her. So that's more of a case management approach. So I think kind of merging the two approaches would be an effective way of dealing with domestic violence shelter.
Well, so you're advocating that maybe some of the systems that are already in place to kind of screen people for allocating resources would remain in place, but there would be this other person that you could check in with regularly to kind of maintain that coherence and that room to breathe when telling your story.
Absolutely.
Would that person's role really fully compensate for the fragmentation that would still be occurring on the other side?
I don't know that it would fully compensate. I think there's always going to be fragmentation of stories. I mean, obviously, you're not going to tell the person that you're trying to get housing from the nitty-gritty details of your abusive situation. That just wouldn't be appropriate.
Right.
But I think having that extra person there that is available for the full narrative would really, really help these women, and it would accrue some of the benefits that Pennebaker and his colleagues have found in their research.
Is there a particular woman whose case you followed, maybe, and whose story did shift kind of dramatically over the course of your exposure to her situation?
You know, I was there for quite some time. We collected this interview data over 15 months, and so, and, you know, continue to be volunteer advocates. And we'd watch women, you know, for their full 30-day stay, and sometimes they would leave, maybe go back to their abuser, then come back to the shelter and all kinds of things like that. And so we'd watch them as they tried to heal and talk to them about safety planning and what they were planning to do for the future. But there wasn't one particular person that I followed.
No one jumps out at you whose story you'd be willing to share some details of, just as far as how the story shifted based on different resources?
You know, they're all real similar. You know, that's the thing, is that they've got to have the certain elements for getting housing. They've got to have, you know, certain.
So like a checkbox.
Like a checkbox, exactly. So to get into the shelter, they've got to fill these certain criteria. So the stories look very similar, the fragmented stories, but the full narratives, the actual cases, what they went through, what they endured, are extremely different. And so, yeah, in the interviews we did get those stories as well. Maybe not the full story, but a good portion of those stories.
Does trust between people at the shelter and these survivors, is that affected by this process?
Absolutely. Trust is so important. And so that's why, like I said, when I would go to the shelter in my volunteer advocate role, that's what I was. I mean, I wasn't a professor at that time. I wasn't a researcher. I was really a volunteer and there to, you know, for them to trust me so that they would be willing to talk to me.
What do you plan to do with this research? Are you going to follow up with shelters?
Absolutely. We've already published some of the research that we did on the organization itself. And we're also going to be presenting some of this research at a national convention in Chicago. I'm also going to go to Emporia State University and talk to a group of people there about it. But also I intend to reach out to shelters around the state to try to talk to them about their current policies and procedures and hopefully give them some insights on how they might do things a little differently that would be more effective for survivors.
Well, we'll look forward to sort of checking in and seeing how that progresses. Thanks so much for talking with me, Adrienne Kunkel.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on the show.